new series that we have been looking at, which is taking us through Matthew, is really examining our lives. It's really challenging every part of our living, our waking, our breathing, our being, and our doing. And this morning, we're going to look at our approach to our giving. We're going to look at what Jesus has got to say about money. So, reading from Matthew 6, verses 1 to 4, and then skipping a little bit on to verses 19 to 24, this is what Jesus says. He says, "Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others, to be seen by them. If you do, you'll have no reward from your Father in heaven." Jesus says, "So when you give to the needy, don't announce it with trumpets as hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they've received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be done in secret. Then your Father who sees what's done in secret will reward you. Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You can't serve both God and money." They're quite challenging words that we've listened to today. And I hope that none of us are going to feel guilty at the end of what I want to bring to you, but encouraged for us to bring our lives before God and to ask Him to speak to us about our approach and the way we live with money. Some of you will know that I studied biology at university many, many years ago. And part of studying biology meant that we had to do practicals. And some of our practicals involved dissections. In fact, I still have a dissection kit up in our loft somewhere in our home today. Well, one afternoon, about 100 of us went into the lab and we walked up to the benches to look at the fish that had been laid out for us to dissect. We picked up our scalpels and we started to cut into these little beasties. And after a few moments, the whole lab stank. The fish had been frozen, but somehow in the defrosting process, the innards had started to rot and go off. So as we cut into what looked beautiful on the outside, the true state of the inside was made known. The smell was so awful, we had to evacuate the lab for the afternoon. It was pretty disgusting. You know, Jesus knows all about the things that make us look fine on the outside, but cause us to go off on the inside. And He knows that money is one of those things that can be an issue for us inside. So He talks to us about money and the way we live with it. Because Jesus knows whether we've got a lot of money or whether we've got a little bit of money, it can end up being our master. and it can take away our ability to live as God calls us to live, which is to live generously. Jesus wants us to live in a Jesus-centered way, and so he says, no one can serve two masters. You can't serve both God and money. A wise man in the Bible who lived hundreds of years before Jesus preached about money said this in Proverbs, give me just what I need. If I have too much to eat, I might forget about you. If I don't have enough, I might steal and disgrace your name. He says, give me just what I need. But what do I need? That is such a big question, isn't it? What is enough? Most of us have more than we need, and therefore we can afford to give open-handedly and live open-handedly with what we have. But it's such a challenge. You know, it's so easy for me to work out what's enough for you, what you need to live on, but it's so much more of a challenge for me to work out what is enough for me and how much I need. But if we remember the words of the wise man writing in Proverbs, God says, give away what you don't need so that your hearts remain true to him. And how much we give and where we give and how we give needs to be an ongoing dialogue that we have with God, an ongoing dialogue that we have with Jesus. And we need to be led by the Holy Spirit as we grapple with this question of what is enough and how much do I need. But as we go through our thinking about being generous, perhaps a good place to start is remembering that generosity starts with Jesus. There is nobody more generous than him. We're going to watch a little clip that helps remind us of what generosity means.
So it was a Thursday morning, and I was in a meeting with a couple of my close friends, and I received a phone call. It was my wife, and she quickly said, we have been matched. And I said, matched to what? She said, a baby. A baby? Yeah, the baby's 10 days old, and it's a baby girl, and they want to know if we can pick her up on Monday. Monday? It was one of those moments where your eyebrows get stuck higher than your hairline, right? Completely surprised. I'm going to be a dad. We're going to be parents. We don't have anything. We don't have a nursery. We don't have diapers. We don't even have a car seat to pick this baby up. Yes. The answer was yes. Yes. Yes, we'll pick up this baby. Yes, I'm going to be a dad. This is crazy. So we did what anyone would do, right? We called our parents. And then we called our close friends. And then in this time, this era, what would anybody do? They would update their Facebook status. We're going to be parents on Monday. Help, right? So our community started getting around us, right? They started dropping things off at our front door. We got diapers. We got onesies. We got things I did not know what to do with. And we even got a car seat given to us. And on Monday, we met our baby girl. This is Jada. And the interesting thing was we experienced all kinds of generosity from our community. But they weren't the heroes. We weren't the heroes. The most generous person in this whole story was Jada's birth mom. She chose us. She chose us to care for her daughter. Forever. And there is nothing we could ever do to repay her. You see, that's what generosity is. It is to freely give with nothing in return. There's no gift I could give her back that meets her gift that she gave me.
If that birth mum was generous to the family that longed for a child, how much more generous is God to us, who not only gave us his son, but allowed his son to die for us? You see, one of the greatest needs of a human being is to be in relationship with God. Our hearts and our souls cry out. If we're not in relationship with him, our hearts and our souls say, there is something missing. We have a need to be in relationship with God. But sin gets in the way. So God's Son came to live among us and finally die for us. So this sin thing, the mistakes and all of the stuff that mucks up our life and our relationship with God could be dealt with once and for all. God's generosity comes in the form of him giving his son, and God's generosity comes in the form of Jesus dying on the cross. And that is a gift. It's something that is given to us, and there's nothing that we need to do or can do in return. And if you don't know what that looks like today, that relationship with God, do come and talk to me at the end of the service, because I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about this gift and that gift that says you don't have to do anything in return. But God's generosity also comes to us in the form of giving the world and everything in it for us to take care of. And this is where we can respond. This is where we can be generous. And we can be generous in the way that God is generous. We can be generous without expecting anything back. We call it worship. We call it expressing our love to God because he has given us out of his generosity to us. There's nobody that demonstrates generosity like God. And he invites us to join in being a generous people to express his generosity in this world. My mum, you hear a lot about my mum and dad. She's such a wonderful source of sermon illustrations. My mum loves a town auction. Something small because she hasn't got a lot to spend, but she just enjoys that bidding and trying to get something. And on one occasion, she spotted something that she wanted and she told my dad to go for it. My dad is a quiet and a fairly discreet man. And he was so subtle about his bids, she didn't think he was doing anything about it, so she started to take over. The auctioneer took a couple of bids and then really kindly said, if you are husband and wife, you might not want to bid against each other. It was definitely a case of the left hand not knowing what the right hand was doing. In Jesus' day, though, that expression, not letting your left hand know what your right hand is doing, didn't actually mean the kind of uncoordinated activity that my parents were displaying at that auction. It very much related to not publicising your good deeds. Because back then in the day, rich people sometimes advertised their wealth by hiring a trumpeter. And so when they came to give a good and generous gift, this trumpeter would play, and everyone would know that this wealthy person was doing something extremely generous. Today, we have social media to do that job for us. A quick Google search tells me that last year, the greatest private donation to a charity was some $500 million. It was given to the University of Oregon, and the generous person was Nike co-founder Phil Knight and his wife Penny. Pop star Taylor Swift in the same year donated £1 million to support flood victims in Louisiana and a further $50,000 to a food bank in Baton Rouge. There's nothing wrong with those gifts. They are good and generous acts. But Jesus says, don't hire a trumpeter and don't boast about your giving on social media. In fact, don't use any public way of letting your good deeds and your giving be known. Keep your giving a private matter. So whether we give to an individual in need, whether we give to a charity that's really dear to our heart, whether we make a one-off gift to our church here or whatever church we might normally worship in, or regular gifts to help the ministries that are going on, God says do it privately. So we don't boast about our direct debits. We don't flash a tenner around before we put it in the offering bag. Being open-handedly Jesus's way means that our giving should be as natural as cleaning our teeth in the morning. But it should also be as private as well. Jesus says, give in a way that doesn't draw attention to yourself and it doesn't draw attention to who you are and what you have. He says, don't let your giving draw out public approval because people might think more of you than they really should. Remember my fish story? It looked great on the outside, but it was covering up a rottenness inside. And if we give for public approval, it may be that our true heart and our true spirit isn't being seen or exposed, and that need for public approval might start to develop an unhealthy dependence on our wealth instead of a dependence on God. Jesus is also guarding against us seeing money and our relationship and righteousness with God. He wants us to know that our generous giving won't result in God overlooking anything going on in our hearts. We can't buy God's favor in any kind of way. God won't turn a blind eye to this if we're generous with that. The only way we are righteous before God is through Jesus, his Son. And there's a story in the Bible about someone that wanted to gain God's approval. He was very, very rich. And he said to Jesus, "What must I do to get God's approval?" And Jesus said, "Go and sell everything you've got." And the Bible tells us that the man walked away from Jesus sadly. He couldn't do it. He was so wedded to his possessions, he couldn't do what Jesus asked. And when we read stories like this, alongside the words that we've looked at in the Sermon on the Mount, you know, it's easy to think that it's only rich people that have a problem with money. But it isn't. Jesus starts talking about those that are rich because he knows how easily wealth can corrupt us. It can change our attitudes towards other people and our attitude towards God. But he's not got anything against rich people, nor does he think we should all be poor. God blesses us with material resources in order for us to enjoy life. But he also blesses us with material resources in order for us to help those in need and to build his kingdom here on earth. Jesus recognizes that money can just be a bigger problem for those who have a lot. But you know, it can be a problem for those who have a little also. Rich or poor, we can still have a stingy attitude towards being generous. A non-generous life can come out of plain selfishness. I'm putting my wants before the needs before the needs of someone else. Selfishness can be a barrier to generosity. But sometimes living in a non-generous way can be more about the distance which separates us from people in need. We might find it hard to connect with the needs of others because we've never known what it's like to not have a meal or not know where we're going to sleep for the night. It might be that we can't connect with people who are poorer than ours because we haven't experienced their way of life. Or maybe it's because they live the other side of the world. Barriers to giving generously and living generously can come about because we're emotionally and experientially distanced from those in need. But I think another barrier to living generously can be our cynicism. Have you ever asked the question, how can I be sure those needs are real? Or what if I give and then I discover that I've been taken for a ride? Our questions like this can stop us giving and living generously. Our cynicism can sometimes get in the way. And we might struggle with those barriers, or we might struggle with other barriers that just hold us back from living generously. But there is no heart attitude that God can't overcome. If we humble ourselves before him and say, Lord, show me where you want me to give, we can be certain he will show us and he will deal with any of our sin around giving and our generosity. I love the fact that Jesus doesn't condemn us when we're not generous, but he understands the struggles that we have with this whole issue and the way it can corrupt our heart. You know, when the rich young ruler walked away, Jesus could have been so critical of him. But actually, with great compassion, he says, how hard it is for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of God. He's not judging, but he understands the challenge in the heart of that young man. And I love at the end of that story, Jesus' good friend Peter jumps up and he says, well, we did it. We left our home. We've given up everything to follow Jesus. And Jesus could have been really hard on Peter and said, that's not really quite the same. But Jesus simply acknowledges that Peter and the other disciples were learning how to follow Jesus in an open-handed and a generous way. And that's what he asks of us today. He's with us in our struggles. He understands the difficult relationship we sometimes have with our possessions and our material wealth. And he invites us to join in on this journey of learning to give. And so we're going to finish our time of thinking about generosity by watching a little video clip that will help us think about our lives and the whole of our lives. And we'll ask God to speak to us as to how and where he might want us to give.
Every day, Americans are bombarded with hundreds of messages suggesting that the good life is attainable through the goods life by making lots of money and spending it on products that claim to make us happy, loved, and esteemed. On the news shows, we hear a near constant refrain from economists and politicians about the importance of consumer spending and economic growth. And around $150 billion are spent most years to embed consumer messages in every conceivable space, from TV shows and websites to public bathrooms and escalator handrails. Lately, marketers have even been paying actors to drop sales pitches into conversations in bars and city parks. But commercialization and consumerism also reach deeper, worming their way into people's psyches and encouraging them to organize their lives around higher salaries and owning more stuff. Unfortunately, this can come at a high price for the well-being of both people and the planet. Research consistently shows that the more that people value materialistic aspirations and goals, the lower their happiness and life satisfaction, and the fewer pleasant emotions they experience day to day. Depression, anxiety, and substance abuse also tend to be higher among people who value the aims encouraged by consumer society. Strong materialistic values also influence our social relationships and thereby affect other people's well-being. Scientists have found that materialistic values and pro-social values are like a seesaw. As materialistic values go up, pro-social values tend to go down. This helps explain why people act in less empathic, generous, and cooperative ways when money is on their minds. When people are under the sway of materialism, they also focus less on caring for the earth. The same type of seesaw is at work here. As materialistic values go up, concern for nature tends to go down. Studies show that when people strongly endorse money, image, and status, they are less likely to engage in ecologically beneficial activities like riding bikes, recycling, and reusing things in new ways. Clearly, if we hope to have a happier, more socially just, and more ecologically sustainable world, then we need to develop ways to diminish the power of materialistic values in our personal lives and in society. Two basic principles for change can help frame the way forward. First, we need to understand what causes people to prioritize materialistic values. For instance, studies show that people focus more on material things when they feel insecure. So instead of buying a new handbag or power tool the next time you've had a blow to your self-esteem, consider a different coping strategy, like spending time with friends or taking a walk outside. Scientists also know that the more that people are exposed to the media, the more they prioritize materialistic values. A couple of ways to diminish the onslaught of consumer messages are to use ad block to hide ads on the internet or to hit mute when commercials play on TV. But these steps can only take us so far. We also need to get active and start to remove advertising from public spaces and from our children's schools so that people aren't exposed to materialistic messages so often. The second principle for change involves promoting intrinsic values for growing as a person, being close to one's family and friends, and improving the broader world. The research shows that intrinsic values not only promote personal, social, and ecological well-being, but can also act to immunize people against materialism. It's that seesaw again. As intrinsic values go up, materialistic values tend to go down. So part of the trick is to build a life that expresses your intrinsic values. That might involve spending more time with people you care about, finding meaningful work, even if it pays less, and taking part in volunteer opportunities for causes you care about. But again, changing our lifestyles is not enough. We also need to advocate for policies that promote intrinsic values. For example, countries like France and Bhutan have recognized that they can't only focus on GDP and other measures of economic growth. Now they are starting to regularly assess citizens' well-being and sense of connection to their communities so as to develop policies that truly encourage these intrinsic values. Similar efforts are underway in some parts of the United States, but they need more support. The grip that consumerism and commercialism have on our world can seem inescapable, and there are certainly powerful forces that push materialistic values on us. But by making changes in our personal lives and by working for broader societal changes, we can break the hold of materialism and be freer to live our intrinsic values. That, in turn, would help us to take important steps toward greater personal well-being, a more humane society, and a more sustainable world.
No mention of God in that, and yet he is woven throughout the whole of that DVD in terms of fighting the forces that go contrary to what Jesus says, live open-handedly and generously. So I hope that God has spoken to us this morning. Where can we give? In a monetary way, in a lifestyle change, maybe with our time and the other gifts that we have. As we reflect on what God might be saying to us today, we remember there is no one more generous than He.